the Fundraising Freedom Podcast with Mary Valone. I'm your host, Mary Valone, and this is the place where aspiring six and seven-figure fundraisers come to be encouraged, empowered, and educated on how to raise more funds and have more freedom. Today, we're in episode 109, and we're talking about the three reasons why it's hard to motivate board members to fundraise. And regardless of whether you have an actual board of directors or you have an advisor group or a group of volunteers who come alongside you to raise funds, this episode is for you because we want to make sure that we can motivate those volunteers and those board of directors to come alongside you and raise more money, right? So here's the thing is I'm going to give you the reasons, but I'm also going to tell you how you can turn things around, okay? So I'm not going to leave you hanging on this one, all right? So first of all, let's discuss a little bit about the board of directors. So in the United States, it's required by, you know, getting your 501c3 status to be a nonprofit, you have to have a board of directors. And typically they require that you have three board members, you know, a president, a secretary, and a treasurer. So this is a governing group of people. They are the ones that are overseeing the guidelines that you submitted to the government. You told them that you were going to do this mission and this vision. And so the board is really creating that credibility to say, we will do what we said we were going to do, and we are a nonprofit. We are going to be ethical in the work that we do, okay? So it's really important that we have a solid group of board of directors that come alongside us. But let's be honest about how a lot of our nonprofits get started. And maybe this is you, maybe it's not, but if you are starting up a nonprofit or you have started up a nonprofit, typically you are just trying to fill out the application process. You are just trying to fill out the form. And part of the requirements was to have those board of directors. And so what did you do? You looked at your circle that was already coming around you in developing this cause, and you pulled together three people and you invited them to serve on the board. And maybe it was just, hey, these are just place setters. These people are just going to sit in these seats for a short period of time until we can actually have the time to recruit the right people to serve on our board of directors. And what happens is that sometimes that happens and sometimes it doesn't. And so you set the bar with that very first group of people that come on board. And if you don't have people who are interested in your fundraising from the beginning or overseeing all the details that comes with being a part of a board, it typically makes it a whole lot harder on you to get going and to be a part of that. And so this is the same thing for all of our, you know, volunteer groups that are coming alongside us. So let's talk about the three reasons now why it's hard to motivate board members to fundraise, okay? Number one, they said yes to help you. And like I said, you were trying to just get some people on board, and you asked a few people and they were like, sure, I'll do you a favor and I'll say yes, right? Okay, I'm doing you a favor. They feel like they don't have any obligation but to put their name on this thing, and no big deal. They're just helping you out. Okay, that's the first reason why they're not motivated, okay? Number two, they care about your mission and they don't care about fundraising. They are so dedicated to your mission and they want to see your mission fulfilled, but they really could care less about raising money or asking people to give. They don't have any desire to do it. And when they came on board, they weren't coming on board to be a fundraiser. They were coming on board to help you fulfill your mission, right? Okay, so that's the second reason why it's hard to motivate them. It's because they don't care about it. They didn't come on board to fundraise. They came on board to serve your mission. And the third reason is they didn't know it was part of their responsibilities when they said yes. And it's so easy to sugarcoat when you're inviting people to come on your board. It's easy just to say, oh, no big deal. We just need your name on a sheet of paper. You know, we won't make you do very much. And it's kind of like, no big deal. It's going to be okay. And then all of a sudden things start to change because you need them to be motivated. You need them to be focused on your fundraising. And now all of a sudden you're trying to turn things on them and they're not buying it. They're not going for it, right? So now you have a board of directors they love your mission and they're probably really incredible people. You probably love them. They're probably, you know, just really great humans. But you have a board of directors or a volunteer group, an advisor group that is not motivated at all around raising funds. And now all the weight of fundraising has fallen back on your shoulders and you're carrying the load. And so we've got to turn this around. We've got to figure out a way where we can motivate those board of directors so that they will say yes to our cause. Okay, so let's take the rest of our time here today and talk about how can we motivate them? How can we get our board of directors and our advisory group to come alongside us to really be the individuals that we thought, you know, like what we really need for our cause. So, okay, number one, I'm going to give you three reasons what, you know, how to motivate them. Okay. So number one, we can't recruit them out of desperation. So no matter, you know, we create our own timeline. We say, oh, this has to be done by a certain time. We wanted to get that 501c3 status. We wanted to get those funds raised. We wanted to get things up and going. So we pulled people together just real frantically and just brought them together. So we have to be able to do this without desperation and be really focused on what kinds of people do we want? What kinds of individuals would we want to serve on our board and serve on our advisory groups? And typically what we want to see is we want people who are an example for others to follow. You know, we want somebody who's already doing the things that we would love for others to do themselves. They're really active in the community. They're bold in their statements. They're not afraid to step out. They're not afraid to invite people in or to invite them to be a part of this cause. They believe in your mission. There's all these criteria that you start to think about when you're like, okay, what kinds of qualities, what kinds of qualifications would I want? And then don't break from them. Don't break from that, because as soon as you, you know, kind of veer off and you're like, well, it's okay if they don't care about this as much as I do. I understand that some people are going to come on board and they might not love it as much as you do, but sometimes you kind of just have this gut feeling like, you know what, if we put them on the board, I think that they're going to be able to step up. But this is kind of like mirroring somebody and saying that you're going to change them, okay? So we don't want a board of directors. We don't want an advisory group of people who believe that, you know, that you believe, well, they'll come around. Oh, they'll change. We don't want that. You know, we really, really want to make sure that they come in strong, that they're motivated, that they're excited, and they're really a solid, shining example of what we want others to do as well. Okay. So let's not ask people to be a part of our board or our advisory group if we feel like they're doing us a favor. We want them to, it has to be a win-win. We both have to win in this relationship. And they want their name out there. They want their organization or their business or the work that them personally, they want to be aligned with something really good. So there's a reason why they're going to say yes and why it's going to be a good fit and a win-win for both of you guys, okay? So the second thing is I'm going to say something that might be a bit controversial, and I hope it doesn't stir anybody to stop listening. But we have to put fundraising first. And I know that we want to put our mission first. Our mission first, fundraising second. But if you don't have any funds in the bank, you don't have a mission. Your mission is only as good as the work that you're able to get out into the public, into the world. And so typically what'll happen is, I mean, some organizations can function on very little money. You know, they typically, you may just need a lot of legwork, a lot of manpower, lots of volunteers, lots of people who are out there spreading your message. And maybe you don't need as much money. But I just want to highlight the fact that fundraising has to come first. We have to address the finances so that we can keep our doors open. If it costs X amount of dollars to do business, we have to make sure that that's at the forefront of our conversations. So if we just say, hey, the mission is the most important thing, and we're going to help all these people, and then, oh, by the way, we need to raise some money, people are going to be like, it's just kind of an afterthought. The fundraising component of it is like the drudgery. That's why I hear so frequently from nonprofits that fundraising is like the F word. You know, it's like, ugh, they hate it. It's just so frustrating. And it's like an afterthought. It's the thing that it's like, oh yeah, we've got to do that charity fundraiser. Ugh, I hate it. You know, and instead of it being the first and foremost thing where it's like, this is what we get to do. We get to celebrate our incredible donors who are all coming together. And as a result, as a result of these fundraising dollars, this is what we get to accomplish with our mission. So if we put fundraising first and mission second, we might actually be able to create greater impact in our mission because we have the dollars that we need to do more. And so the conversation with your board members and with your advisory group members, those volunteers, is that we have to talk about the fundraising dollars first. What is it going to take? And this is where I encourage that my clients, the people that I work with, that I want you to consider doing a give or get. I want every member to come on board and to already have a financial goal, a give or get. So when I use the term give or get, it really means that you're either going to financially give it out of your own pocket or your own business. It's either going to come in that way, or you're going to get it from someone. You're going to engage other people. You're going to invite your contacts and your friends and the people that are in your inner circle to come be a part of our cause and bring those donations in. So you're going to give it or you're going to get it. And, you know, when I did my $500,000 fundraiser that I talk about quite frequently, is that I had a $10,000 give or get from the leaders who are on my advisory group. $10,000. Their name could not be attached in an advisory level without a financial goal of $10,000 that they were going to either give it out of their own pocket or they were going to get it from their contacts. And that was a really important bar to set. And I think it's a really important thing for us to consider when it comes to our board of directors and when it comes to the people who come in our inner circle as our advisory team. Because all of a sudden, if you don't have any financial goals and they're out representing you and your cause, and they're inviting other people to be a part of it, and they're saying, hey, you can give money if you want to. I don't give money. But if you want to, that's okay, right? Like, that doesn't even make sense. That doesn't even process for me that we would have somebody representing our cause who does not financially give at all to the work that we do. Now, I've seen in some circumstances where somehow they fly by and they put in those volunteer hours and they somehow can pull money out of the sky and bring that in. So I'm not going to say that it is an absolute, the bar should stop there. But I really believe strongly that we have to make sure that anybody who's in our inner circle, those are the people that are sharing the message. So they're sharing a lot of it by example. And if they're financially giving, other people are going to financially give. If they're volunteering, other people are going to see that and they're going to want to do it too. So this is social proof. This is what persuasion is all about, is that when we see other people doing it, we want to do it too. So our board is our example for others to follow, this advisory group, this circle that's coming around you, okay? So it's important that they do financially give and that they're a part of the mission in that way. So I'm going to push you. I'm going to encourage you to have that give or get, to have that they do something for your organization financially. Otherwise, it doesn't make sense for them to be serving on your board. Okay. And then the third thing that I want to discuss about how can we motivate them is that we have to set clear expectations. We have to set clear expectations for all of our volunteers, not just our board of directors, but every single volunteer that comes on our team with us, is that they have to know what they're saying yes to, because that whole bait and switch just does not work. If you tell people, oh, it's no big deal, it's okay, whatever you can give, whatever time you can give, no big deal. Well, what kind of expectation are you setting for those volunteers? You're saying, we're no big deal. We're it's okay if you just chuck some change our way. We'll be okay with that. No, that is not okay. If your cause is going to be their charity of choice, if you're going to be the thing that they talk about, if you want them to be writing about your charity in their bio for their job, if you want them to be interviewed on TV or for a newspaper or a radio station or something, and they say, you know what, you're so generous, you're so kind and giving in the community, what are you a part of? Well, I'm sorry, but I want that person to be talking about my cause. I want them to be saying, you know what, I support this incredible cause. This is my charity of choice. This is what I give my time to. And I encourage other people to do the same. Wouldn't you want every single one of your board members to be able to say that in front of a large group of people? Yes, you know, that's what we want. And so by setting clear expectations, we're saying we want you to be proud of the work that you're doing with us. We want you to feel confident enough to be able to talk about the work that we're doing. So if we're not doing a good enough job explaining that, then we need to give them the actual verbiage. We need to work on what are we saying? What are we telling the community through our volunteers? Now, this didn't come to me like right away. It was kind of after a few years that I was working on my largest fundraiser, I started to notice that our name was coming up in when people were getting awards, you know, when people were being honored in the community for doing incredible work, not only in their job, but in the, you know, just in their volunteer work. And I started seeing our cause and our name being shared with a sense of pride. And I was like, oh my gosh, it was beautiful. It was like, that is what we want. That is what you want from your volunteers and especially your board of directors to be so proud of the work that they're doing that they just want to tell other people about it. And because it says something about them, and it also says something about your cause, that it's worthwhile to tell others about it because they've had such a great experience in the work that they've done. So here's the thing about all of this is that, you know, we have to set the bar. We have to be able to tell people what we want. We have to tell them what expectations it's going to take. You know, like what do we expect when somebody signs on with us, when somebody serves as a board member? And I know it is hard, especially if you're in a place where you're like, I have tried and tried and tried to get people on our board, and it's just hard. People don't want to volunteer with us. And in that way, they just don't want to come on board. Okay, well, what kind of culture are we creating? So take a step back and start looking at what are people seeing in your board of directors? Are they seeing that it's not, they don't respect the people on your board? Maybe they don't admire, they don't look up to the people on your board. Well, then we've got a problem because the bar has been set so low. And so now we have to start to consider what's it going to take for people to really step up? And we've got to almost go back to the drawing board and say, what kinds of people do we want to surround ourselves in order for us to take it to the next level? And I understand that it is, you are in a tough situation. And especially if you are the executive director or that development director and you're trying to raise money and it's like you don't have control over the board. Sometimes you don't feel like, well, I'm not the person who actually recruits the board. We have other people who do that. So I have to just take what I can get. Okay, so here's where I want to encourage you on a completely different level. And this is where, if you've followed my book, if you've listened to this podcast for very long, you know that I push the volunteer, the fundraising team. And this is what I had to do. I was not responsible for the board of directors. I did not have any control over the board. And the board oversaw the entire nation. They did not care about my little community. They did not care. Well, they did, but they were not focused on our town or my specific fundraiser. So what I had to do in order to find a group of people, in order to kind of create my own board of directors, was that I started to recruit people to come in who were specifically raising funds for my fundraiser. They didn't have their focus on governing rights. They were not looking at all of the fundraisers that were going on in our organization. They weren't looking at all the mission stuff. All they were looking at was my single fundraiser, this signature fundraiser that we were putting on. And this is why I'm so adamant about building out your team, you know, enlisting your team, which is step 3 of my 7-step process. And I tell you, I want you to enlist that team because there are people out there in your community, people in your inner circle who care about your fundraising. So sometimes it's easier to say, I'm not going to force somebody to love fundraising. I'm not going to try and shove this, you know, square into the round hole. You know, I am absolutely going to go and find the right people who love to raise money, who are passionate about, you know, making money. I mean, like, look at all of our business leaders out there. Like, they're not sitting around hoping that money is going to walk in the door. They're looking at different ways that we can invest and you know, turn $10 into $100 or $1,000 into $100,000. They're looking at all those different intricate ways. And if you can recruit somebody like that, to come onto your fundraising team, they're going to bring that same skill set to the table when it comes to your money, when it comes to your fundraising. So that's why I start to say sometimes it's easier to just create this committee, to create this advisory group of fundraisers that can look at your dollars, and they don't have to be distracted with the mission. They don't have to be distracted with, you know, the governing rights and governing, duties that come with being a part of a board. So I tell people right off that I'm like, I want you to focus on your board first. We need to make sure that the board is solid. Put the time and energy into making sure your board is good if you have control over it. If you don't have control over your board, start looking at this fundraising committee idea. And of course, I'm going to encourage you to read chapter 3 of my book, Fundraising Freedom, because that is specifically the chapter that I talk about how to recruit this person, how to recruit the first person to join your fundraising team, and then how to start building out that team so that they can go and share your message with the masses. And we can't go this alone. We can't just continue to talk only. We can't be the only ones that are talking about our fundraising. We have to make sure that other people are out there sharing the same message and are motivating and moving people towards giving to your cause. So this is where I don't want to confuse anything when it comes to the organizational chart for your organization, because every single individual organization, you all have just a unique way of how you have your organization set up. But it's not hard to wrap your arms around or wrap your mind around the fact that you have 3 to 5 people that are specifically looking at only your fundraising. They're only looking at your money, and they're saying, how can we do this better? How can we communicate better? How can we tell our story better when it comes to this fundraiser, this dollar amount that we're trying to raise? So if you don't have a group of people who are raising funds for your cause, there is no doubt in my mind that you're probably in a very frustrated place right now, because that is hard. I've been there. I've done it by myself. I did it for 6 years working for Special Olympics and the ALS Association. I was like, I had volunteers, but they were just not motivated to fundraise. And I was trying to just rack my brain around, why is it that they're not raising money for us? I mean, sure, they would write a check and they would invite a few people to come in, but I didn't feel like they were a part of it like I was. You know, I was all in on it, and I felt like they were just kind of like, yeah, we'll put our name on that, and yeah, we'll help you. We'll show up to those meetings every now and again. But they were not bought in. They were not like sold out for the dollars that we were trying to raise. And it wasn't until I started to really grasp this team aspect, this, you know, pulling your board together, pulling your advisory group or this volunteer fundraising team together, and actually getting them to pick up and all move in the same direction together. And this is why when we talk about your mission statement and your vision, that you have a specific mission and vision for your fundraising, because this group of people will be so on board with that. If you have a $1 million goal or a $100,000 goal, whatever it is, they are going to be driven to raise those dollars because they know what you asked them for help, and they know exactly what they need to do to help you. And so they're not confused. They're not, you know, just showing up to show up. They're not putting their name on stuff just to have their name on stuff. They're motivated and driven to help raise those dollars, because in the end, they want to help more people and they want to impact more lives. So in the end, mission still matters. And that's what I want to make sure that you understand, is that by no means am I saying that the mission doesn't matter, because it absolutely matters. It's the driving force behind everything. We don't need dollars if we don't have a mission, right? If we don't have a reason, and we don't have people waiting in the wings who need our help. So mission is so important, but we have to make sure that people understand that our fundraisers and raising funds is what ultimately is what's keeping our doors open and is allowing us to create greater impact. And so I want that for you, okay? I absolutely want that for you. So today, when we talk about these, you know, 3 reasons why it's hard to motivate your board members, just remember how much control we have. You know, if there is a culture that you walked into that was just like, well, they just said, hey, the volunteers can show up whenever they want to show up. They can come to the meetings whenever they come to the meetings. But I want you to understand that you are in full control over the boundaries that you set. So when you walked in the door, when you took the position, or You were given that title of whatever it is that you have the ability to say, we are not going to do it this way anymore. We're going to change things. We're going to move in a way where it's like everybody comes and they're just excited about being a part of this. And it's not going to happen overnight. I don't expect that. But gradually, you can start setting the bar higher. You can start to create different expectations for the volunteers who come alongside you and come onto your team. So I'm just going to tell you the three things. Like I said again, I don't want you to recruit out of desperation. I want you to put that fundraising first, and I want you to set clear expectations for your volunteers and then actually act them out, because more is caught than taught, right? So they're going to catch on real quick that this is how we do business. This is how we run, because this is what, how we act it out. We start on time. We end on time. We follow through with ideas that are given during those meetings. We don't meet just to meet. Like, we're meeting because we have purpose and we have intention, and we're going to go after this, and we're going to go make a difference, and we're going to invite people to be a part of our fundraising efforts and a part of our mission. So, you know, a lot of people have asked me to serve on their boards in the past, and I'll be honest, I have declined that position. So I personally, and the reason why I've done it is because I just want to focus on fundraising. And obviously, as you guys know, my heart is for raising money. And so this is why I'm adamant about creating a fundraising team, is because some people are going to be really excited about being on your fundraising team and not having to worry about all the governing stuff. But they can just look at the dollars, they can look at those financial reports and the numbers, and really kind of just network and connect people in a way to where people, you know, are can quickly make a difference with their money. And so there are people out there that are just like me that want to be on your fundraising team. And so I'm going to continue to say that message, because I think sometimes we think that, why would anybody want to fundraise? And the only reason why you would think that way is because you have some aversion to fundraising, not because they do. So look at these business owners who absolutely are driven by the numbers. They love walking in the door and figuring out how they can bring in more dollars and how they can connect people in a way that brings in, you know, more money for their specific business. Why would they not be able to transfer those same skills over into your nonprofit? Okay, so just remember that. Just because somebody might have said no to be on your board of directors does not mean that they're going to say no to being on your fundraising team. So be, you know, just be thinking about that maybe it's something that you should consider. Maybe you should consider creating a committee, an advisory group specifically around fundraising. So, all right, well, that's my message for you today. I do want to tell you that last week I did a training on the 7 proven strategies to overcome fundraising failure. And I'll have a link in the show notes for you on that, because that recording is available for you if you didn't get a chance to join me. I came alongside my friend Joel Kessel. He's a nonprofit strategic advisor. And so the two of us led that training. So that was last week, and the recording is available. And this week I'm doing another training, and this is my last training for a couple months. Okay. So every couple months I love to do these webinar trainings, because it just gives me an opportunity to get out there and to train and to meet new people. So our next training, which is going to be this Tuesday, 1 p.m. Central Standard Time. And if you can't make it, if you're listening to this after Tuesday, you can catch the recording. Just use the same link that's in the show notes. But this specific training is for board members. So I wanted to talk today on boards, because I want to make sure that if you want to increase, if you want to do something about making sure that your board is focused on fundraising, invite them to come join us for this training. This will be a great opportunity. So I have invited my friend David Baker to come be my co-host on this training. And David has raised millions and millions and millions of dollars for organizations like libraries and adoption centers and churches and you name it. The guy has been in the industry for well over 20 years, and he works with planned giving and capital campaigns. So he knows how to raise money, and he works directly with board members to make that happen. So if you want your board to come join us, be sure to invite them to be a part of it. And they can actually register using this link. It's just maryvaloney.com/ board secrets. Okay. MaryValoney.com/board secrets. And I'll have the link on there before Tuesday and after, regardless of whether you can join live or not. So definitely encourage them to come listen to this, because I think this is going to be a don't miss training series. Okay. So be sure to join us for that training. And I adore you guys. And I'm so grateful that you're continuing to grow and learn and to stretch yourself. So thank you for being a part of today's episode. And we'll be back same time, same place next week. And I look forward to seeing you on Tuesday's training, specifically talking about the 7 fundraising secrets every nonprofit board member should know. Okay. 7 fundraising secrets every nonprofit board member should know. Okay. So that's what we're talking about on Tuesday. All right. In the meantime, let's go get it. Let's go raise some money. Let's go recruit those board members that we need. And let's go change the world one volunteer and $1 at a time. Would you like to create a killer 6 or 7-figure signature fundraiser where you have long-term sustainability, less stress, and the freedom to focus on what really matters? Well, Fundraising Freedom Academy may be just what you need. I'm Mary Valoney, and I created an 18-month training program that gives you the clarity and confidence to launch, grow, and scale your signature fundraiser, including weekly coaching calls, masterclass trainings, and easy-to-edit templates to build your signature fundraiser. This was the exact plan I used to net $500,000 with a first-year event. Apply today for the next Fundraising Freedom Academy class at fundraisingfreedomacademy.com. That's fundraisingfreedomacademy.com.